This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome to my diverse audience in the truest sense of the word, not just the shallowness of skin color. This is Lana. Joining us today is Tuilev Pavel Vladimirovich from Moscow, and in Russia he's well known. Tuilev is a scholar, writer, and professor of the International Slavic Institute in Moscow with a PhD in history. He is on the forefront of the European New Right and Aryan Slavic movement in Russia and is the publisher of the magazine Atenei. Tuilev is the author of many publications in different genres from Russia, Europe, and America. Some of his articles and interviews are collected in the book The White World in My Heart. We'll discuss the idea written about by German philosopher Walter Schubart, who wrote in Europe and the Soul of the East that the West has fallen prisoner of materialism or Promethean culture and lives in a time of crisis. He thought that the West was unable to save itself on its own and that the new awakening has to come from the East, from Russia. We'll also discuss the need to unify Russia with the rest of Europe and the new right alternative to combat modern degeneracy. Then we'll discuss a bit about Slavic paganism and ancient Slavic people. Tuilev Pavel Vladimirovich, coming up. Welcome, Mr. Tuilev. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, dear Lana, for your kind invitation.
You're a respected professor and a well-known thinker in Russia and Europe, so I'm looking forward to this conversation. But can I use your pagan name, Buyan? Is that how you say it?
Well, you may call me better Mr. Tuilev or professor, because I'm a teaching history and languages. Considering my pagan name, Buyan, that I use as a literary pseudonym, it's a long story. It means a magic island, something like Thule.
Very nice. Well, we have so much to talk about, so let's just jump right into this. Well, as the German philosopher Walter Schubart wrote in Europe and the Soul of the East, he said that the West had fallen prisoner of materialism or Promethean culture and lives in a time of profound crisis. And he thought that the West was unable to save itself on its own and that the new awakening has to come from the East, from Russia. So what are your thoughts on this?
You are absolutely right to choose this question or this quotation from Walter Schubart. He is one of the best thinkers of the 20th century. I could call him a prophet. The West cannot live without East, it's obviously. Historically, the European culture took many discoveries and sacred knowledge from Asia, pre-Roman civilizations first, and then from India and Byzantine. Christianity itself has Eastern roots, you know. Ex oriente lux. And today, Russia, that is situated in the heartland of the old world, in the center of Eurasia, is the bridge between East and West. Russia is the axis of world history. That's why the Russian soul, expressed in art, in music, in philosophy, in our traditional life, is very attractive for European intellectuals.
Well, there's definitely a need to unify Russia with the rest of Europe, and I know you support efforts to build the new continental axis, which is Paris, Berlin, Moscow, or a pan-Aryan bloc from Spain to India. You've also talked about a post-NATO alternative, a new military and political bloc. So tell us about your thoughts on this.
I should say to reunify, because the Tsarist Russia used to be a European power. Old Russians have Nordic, Slavonic, and Aryan origin. In the 19th century, our emperors were the leaders of the European diplomacy. The Bolshevik Revolution and so-called Perestroika have broken this geopolitical situation. And my generation wants to re-establish continental alliance. The strategic axis Paris, Berlin, Moscow, developed by Synergie Européenne in the 19th of the last century, was supported by Vladimir Putin government, but they couldn't realize the project of the new Great Europe from the Atlantic to the Pacific Ocean for many reasons. My idea was to complete the European axis with Spain in the West and India in the East, So we could have a strong pan-Aryan union. It was realized in the publishing policy of my New Right magazine, Athenae. Of course, China is very important for the continental stability and peace, but it is too different from the racial point of view. The Mongoloid population of China is 10 times bigger than the European Russian one. So, racial assimilation in this case means dissolution of the minority. Considering the alternative post-NATO military bloc, we wanted to find good partners in Europe and USA for the further strategic cooperation. Our ex-minister of defense, Mr. Ivanov, has even proposed the idea of the Northern Ireland, Northern Alliance. But North Atlantic Treaty Organization bosses didn't want these radical changes. U.S. Army wants to be the only chief in the European world. USA seeks for the global hegemony. American oaks don't need strong partners. They need vassals and victims. The Yugoslavian catastrophe and the newest strategy in the Ukraine shows what kind of Europe they need. Bomb and build. That's their bloody business. Mm-hmm. So we have to protect ourselves from this banditism. And that's why Russia looks for new partners in the East and all over the world.
Well, you mentioned Synergies European and your magazine Athenae. So tell us about that and anything else you'd like to share for English-speaking listeners so they can learn more.
Synergy European is a circle of pan-European and new right activists, mostly intellectuals or politicians. It was founded in the 90s of the last century. A Belgian thinker and publisher, Robert Stoikers, has become its general secretary, and he published some magazines. In that time, I was the editor of the traditionalist Russian magazine, The Heritage of Ancestors. And we decided to exchange ideas with Synergy. In the first year of the new millennium, I have founded the Almanach Athenae, that means Athenaeum, the temple of wisdom. It was my answer to the challenges of the 21st century. In the ideology, our Athenaeum did not imitate any of anterior schools. We were conscious that returning to old religions and myths in their archaic forms is impossible in our age. However, we wanted to continue the classical tradition and to promote new aristocracy in Russia. Tackling the problems of the contemporary world, we touched upon a wide range of topics dealing with history and racial studies, religion and aesthetics, science and technology, economics and politics, international relations, of course, and the art of world war. During 10 years, I have published hundreds of very important materials of most diverse genres, like analytical forecasts, strategic researches, academic articles, literary essays, books and CDs, in reviews, and so on. I have also organized in Moscow some international conferences like The White World's Future and Russia and Europe New Perspectives. They gathered famous European thinkers like Guillaume Fay, France, Pierre Vial, France, David Duke, USA, Pierre Krebs, Germany, Chris Roman, Flanders. As a result, we have founded Euro-Russian Geopolitical Center in Belgium. The last paper edition of our Athenaeum was published in 2008 for political and technical reasons. And now we have only a web version of the Athenae, and it's very different from what we had 10 or 12 years ago. Anyway, you're welcome to visit the English page of our web forum.
Well, how can we work and fight together for a traditionalist and new right alternative to this modern degeneration that we're seeing?
Oh, the answer to this question is not so easy as it seems to be, dear Lana. First, we need to know the achievements of our movement all over the world. And we Russians usually know better what's happening in the West than Europeans and Americans know about us.
Yes,
we read and speak English, German, French, Spanish, but Western people very seldom speak Russian. You don't know our history and our victories. So I propose the White Pride activists to discover the unknown continent. And you will find a lot of surprises then. The good news is that this process is on a way. The International Conservative Forum that took place in St. Petersburg this year has gathered about 50 leaders from many countries and organizations, including Sam Dixon and Jared Taylor from American Renaissance.
Yes.
You know them, do you?
Yes.
The delegates of different views agreed to cooperate for a spiritual alternative to the modern degeneration. The liberal capitalist society has criticized this outstanding event, but some of its principle, because some of its principle do not admit the aggression of the new American world order and its libertarian tolerance.
Well, I have to ask, since we never get the real story of Russia, would you say Russia is controlled by a capitalist oligarchy, or what is it?
Modern Russia has been controlled by capitalist oligarchy before Putin's regime. That's truth. And I can say openly that it was a Zionist mafia, because only seven Jewish bankers, the head of the Russian Jewish Congress, in Yeltsin time, control 50%, the half of the financial system of our big country. It's incredible.
Yeah.
But it is truth. Now, the Russian government is much more independent from international bank system, but it's very difficult to oppose it. I hope you know this problem.
Yes, I do.
Let me tell you about my own experience then. It is connected with publishing Anthony Sutton books on conspirology in Russian. Do you know him?
Oh, yes, we do. Uh-huh.
Oh, we came, Anthony Sutton came to the USA from England to make researches in the Hoover Institute of Wars and Revolutions. And the second part of the last century, Anthony Sutton has written some very important studies, especially about Wall Street, Wall Street bankers, and the order Skull and Bones. Now, some of them I have omitted in Russia. I can make the list. How the order creates wars and revolutions, trilateral over America, the Federal Reserve Bank conspiracy, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, and Wall Street and the rise of Hitler. All these books are published in Russian in Moscow. The main conclusion of this outstanding researcher is that the order used in the world politics, the dialectical principle of the controlled conflict. When two sides make war, the third participant play on the contradictions of this conflict. The American New World Order is the result of this strategy.
Well, in America, some of these topics, they're considered radical and racist. So is it the same in Russia?
Well, anti-capitalist critics has been always considered radical in the USA. But in Russia, we have a long socialist experience during the USSR, when anti-capitalist and anti-imperialism were crucial points of the official communist propaganda. At the same time, the Soviet anti-Zionist movement was not racial and not anti-Jewish, as it was in the National Socialist Germany. Russian conspirologists know that anti-Semitic Hitler was the instrument of the Anglo-American geopolitical game against Germany and Russia. It was very insidious, but wrong. It is impossible to conquer Russia that is protected by God.
Well, in your book, The White World in My Heart, you brought up an interesting concept by S.N. Trubetskoy, who developed the concept of the Sobornost, of human consciousness, and I think that's very relevant today. So tell us about it and how it ties into your idea of spiritual soil.
Oh, it is a very special point of my philosophy, and not easy to explain in two sentences. But I will try if you want.
Please.
Sobornost is a concept that expresses free, aggregative, personal, organic, self-developing unity. It derives from the word sobor, which means a process of coming together, of moving from different directions toward one point. It is close to the symbol of the Orthodox faith, the ancient Greek term katholikos, for all, according to all, and all together, mystically expressed in the Holy Trinity and the Church itself. Many Russian thinkers developed the universal idea of sobornost, and Sergei Trubetskoy, that you have mentioned, is one of them. His personal view refers to the supra-individual nature of human consciousness, of human mind and language, to the principal vector of its development, from a syncretic view of the world through the individualistic to a synthetic view, uniting all forms of comprehending reality, intuition, religion, art, philosophy, science, and practice. It teaches us to see the eternal in time, because every person, every I, and you, Lana, is a part of the divine soul. Sobornost is manifested in many forms of human life, family, communities, free statehood, various religions, and international organizations. Some saints and prominent persons like Sergius of Radonezh or Nikolai Fyodorov turn after their death into the symbols of sobornost too. And we pray to the Sobor of all saints who have achieved glory on Russian land and believe that our souls will unite with them and with God after the final trial.
So is this idea of sobornost, is it returning in Russia?
Yes, of course. There are various institutions that use this sacred principle in the name of the organizations and in their programs. It is really important to understand that we can cooperate and co-create with God or with gods. This is our common theurgist mission.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the Slavic people. We don't hear much about them over here, but in your view, where is the origin point of Slavic people?
Well, first of all, I would like to remind that there are 18 Slavonic ethnoses that compose the majority of 15 states. Altogether, we are 300 million people, yes, 300 million people. Slavonic tribes proceeds from the Indo-European family, and sometimes they are called Aryans. That is not very correct from the scientist's point of view. Racially, we are a very important part of the white race. Northern Slavs, genetically, are very close to the Baltic race, and Southern Slavs have much in common with Turan or Turkish anthropological type. Russian people is the biggest Slavonic nation, you know, and we are about 100 million. Russians, by nature, constitute 80% of all population of our country. The myth about Mongoloid influence into the Russian genetics is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Incorrect. European Russians are very close to Baltic and German peoples. Some years ago, I have written and published a book, Veneti Slavs and Sisters, where I prove this thesis with many details from historical point of view.
Well, at the start of your book, you talk about how the Russian Tsar's dynasty goes back to the House of Rurik or Rurug. I know this story, but what can you tell us about Rurik and the Rus? Where did Rurik come from? What about Rurik's role in establishing Russia?
Okay. Yes, you're absolutely right. First Russian Tsar dynasty goes back to the House of Rurik. It was a sacred name of a very ancient family and old city in Germany, in Western Germany, near modern Mecklenburg. Rarog is a totem. It means a firebird, like Phoenix. Rurik was a legendary Viking that organized all Russian state with Novgorod as a capital.
Mm-hmm.
Russian Vikings has conquered the merchant way from the Baltic to the Black Sea, where Kiev was an important center. This is the axis of our Middle Age history. And here we find the roots of the Russian Crimea.
Now, how did Rurik convert to Christianity, establishing it among the Rus? I know it's kind of a funny story how this happened.
No, it was not Rurik, no. Askold and Dir were first Russian Vikings that accepted Christianity in the 19th century. Not 19th, the 9th century. Then came Saint Olga and her grandson Vladimir. The funny story is about how Russian princes had to choose between Orthodoxy, yes, Catholicism, Judaism, and Islam. As you know, they selected Orthodoxy because it's very spiritual and beautiful.
Well, tell us about this dual faith that existed for 200 years, because it was interesting how native ways held on for a very long time. So did it influence Orthodox Christianity?
Oh, it's another long story, dear Lana, because so-called dual faith lived for 2,000 years and not 200. First of all, we must understand that so-called paganism or heathen faith has very, very ancient roots. The cult of sacred fire, for example, is at least 500,000 years old. Half of the million years old. Some animal totems like bear, related with the sky ursus, are about 30,000 years old. And we find archaic sculptures with Great Mother, a woman they are called Venera, Venus, by archaeologists. They are at least 20,000 years old. So when Christianity came, the background of the human mentality was complete with very strong religious myths and traditions. Historically, the Savior Jesus Christ had also ancestors like Krishna and Buddha. They all were incarnations of the divine absolute. The Holy Trinity itself is a Christian version of the Vedic Trimurti. And the Mother Mary is the heiress of the Great Mother, Indian Mahadevi, or old European Mater Matuta. A Christian church had to assimilate various pagan traditions, but they could not do it quickly. This way appeared the mixture of the heathen myth and Christian theology that we call dual faith.
Well, before Christianity, we know the Slavs, they had their own traditions and pantheon of deities. So what were some of these primordial traditions of the Slavs before Christianity?
The oldest period of the Russian and Slavonic primordial tradition is connected with the Hyperborean civilization that took place on the northern Arctic continent, many thousand years ago. In the northern part of Eurasia are found the rest of prehistoric cities and temples like Arkaim or Arctic islands. Some sacred Indo-Aryan texts, as Veda, confirm the history of migrations of Aryans from the north to the south.
Mm-hmm.
Many of local toponyms, especially river names from northern Russia, have parallels in Veda. The primordial Hyperborean tradition is reflected in the common Indo-European mythology, very well known in the academic world. When we speak about native gods, we mean our primordial, heathen, Indo-Aryan, ancient European, and old Slav. Old Slavonic pantheon. It has its own history described in many ways in different schools. There are hundreds of traditions to interpret, to present, and to glorify our pagan gods. The native gods pantheon is many thousand years ago, of course. The roots have been growing from antediluvian era, from Paleolithic times and matriarchy society. It is not easy to study this primordial tradition as a whole, to see genetic and linguistic links, to avoid subjectivism, localism, and personal fantasies. For example, a so-called Western schools like to speak about Indo-European tradition, but generally surveys Celtic, Germanic and Indian heritage. The Balto-Slavic, Scythian or Russian antiquities are not well known in the West. This ideological mistake is not acceptable for the modern Europe that unites Western and Eastern parts of the continent.
Well, what more can you tell us about their worldview in ancient pagan Slavic times?
In short, the Tree of Life, that is called Arbor Mundi in Latin, or Yggdrasil in Scandinavian languages, united three worlds: the sky above, the earth in the heart, and the underground below. These three spheres were populated by pagan gods of different qualities. In the Hyperborean mythology, for example, the god of the sky, Zeus, has a vertical structure, symbolized by a nexus, phallus, or tree, or Shiva lingam. Zeus impregnates Leto, or Lada, who personifies the astral zodiac, round in form and rotating in function. Her symbol is a ring, diamond ring. Zeus and Leto produce twins, namely the polar goddess's bear, Artemis, Russian Lelia or Rozhanitsy, and Apollo, Russian Kupala, Dashbok, the archer, who is associated with the Taurus constellation. And both twins were born under the pole star at the point of absolute north of the world axis, which is why they are called Hyperborean. Various Slavonic tribes have their own peculiarities in the pantheon, and it is impossible to describe it in this interview.
Sure. Well, are there any preserved writings or stories of any kind from ancient Slavic people? And what about old Slavic art that's maybe depicting some of these native gods?
Oh, sure. Sure. We have a very rich corpus of ancient folk songs and magic fairy tales. I should mention northern Bylinas, folk stories, about Volga, Svyatogor, and Sadko. These are old personages. the very popular nowadays book of Veles, Velesova Kniga, to my opinion, was written in the middle of the 20th century by folklorist Yuri Miralyubov. So it is a modern literature. It is a reconstruction. Old Slavonic and Russian art represents a rich variety of traditional Indo-European myths, such as Tree of Heaven, with paradise, birds, Arbor Mundi, I have mentioned it, the archaic goddesses, figures as Motherland and Rozhanitsa, Mother Matuta, Dashbok, the god of the sun, like Apollo, Rod, the godfather, and Perun, the god of power and thunder, like Thor. Their images come from pre-Christian times and live until modern times in our folklore and even in the modern art. Everybody who is interested in this question may read in the internet my illustrated article, Native Gods in the Russian Art. So I can give you a link.
Definitely. We'll share that with this interview if people want to learn more. Mm-hmm. Well, our principles were displaced by these modern theologies, and we know before that existed hundreds of pagan gods and goddesses that we once knew by name. So is it important to remember them today?
Not everybody can enter details of the old pagan pantheon, and they don't need it. For many people, that's enough to understand the god, to understand that the god has innumerable diversity in itself. Diversity. But I tried to study this interesting question profoundly. It took me about 20 years. In result, I have published a beautiful album, Native Gods by Slavonic Artists, that contain about 100 articles and more than 200 pictures in color and black and white. And it is available to order, too.
Well, the Slavic pantheon parallels with Nordic mythology. You have Thor and his hammer, and you have Perun with his axe. It's very similar. Do you find these parallels are seen all over the white ancient world?
Of course, there are parallels of the Slavic pantheon with Nordic mythology, because Russian has Nordic origin, as I have told. Thor and Perun has some common characteristics, indeed. And Freya is close to Lada, for example.
Well, you devote a chapter to Russian native goddesses like Lada. Does the idea of Mother Russia come from a pagan idea?
Exactly. The idea of Mother Russia has pagan roots. She's like Mother Earth and Sophia, the divine wisdom. Lada is different. She is the principle of cosmic harmony, love, and accord. In Russian, Lada is harmony, accord, expressed in the image of the goddess, who corresponded to the Greek Leto and the Roman Latona. Let me quote my poem devoted to Lada. Lado, my dearest, you're a twice blessed mother. Gods are your infants, the glorious brother and sister. Svarog's wheel rotates your heavenly throne. Unfettered Boreas unfurls your wings. The spring sun gives life to all around you. Birds sing in triumph, and young girls dance in rings. Clear waters compose magic hymns, and the graces sing a lullaby to the earth. The classical sculptures of Lada, Roman Latona, which have come down to our times, show her with two infant twins, either in their arms or on her lap. The twins are Artemis, Diana, the Slavonic Dzevana, Uživa, and Apollo, Slavonic Kupala and Kupavon. So this is the very exact image of Lada.
Well, many female goddesses were demonized, forgotten, or superimposed with this Virgin Mary. It makes me think of Baba Yaga. She was demonized as a witch in Christian times. My grandma used to read me some Baba Yaga stories. So tell us who Baba Yaga really was.
Yes, Baba Yaga is a very famous fairy tale personage. All children know her, and she's a terrible witch that has some characteristic of Vedic Kali, the goddesses of death. Of course, she was criticized and demonized by the Christian church. Yes.
Well, the Slavonic Vili and Greek nymphs were also demonized, right?
Yes, but Vili, in Russian Rusalka, were very different from Baba Yaga. They were symbols of the natural spirits first, and many centuries after become the demons of dead women in the rivers. So it is a romantic story and not archaic myth.
Well, in your view, do you think because of the religious demonization of the feminine during that era, which was more in balance with the masculine and feminine as it should be, it ultimately led to an imbalance between the sexes?
Oh, no, no, I don't think so. I think this problem has another origin, social and politics. But it is important. The feminization, it is a very important problem of the modern world, I agree.
At one time, our European women remembered and they honored their fertility as a sacred gift, but now it seems we take it for granted if we even have children at all. Maybe this low birth rates are a symptom of us being cut off from the knowledge of a natural order, nature, fertility, and our ancestors. What do you think?
Yes, I agree that ancient women, our ancestors, honored their fertility. It was an old tradition. It was just naturally. For example, in Tsarist Russia, families consisted of 10 or 12 persons. My mother was the elder daughter, and she had three brothers and one sister. So five or six children that were just normal. But now the situation is absolutely different because this tolerance for homosexualism is very dangerous. And the scientists of the 20th century discovered that the main reason is contraception and aborts that kill millions of childs impregnant. And one of my friends calculated that much more childs, people were killed impregnant than they died in the First and the Second World War.
Wow.
Yes. So this is a catastrophe. And now we try to influence anyway. But indeed, this is a big problem, even for me, for example. Because my first two wives, they didn't have children. Mm. So this is a very personal drama. And I think that you understand what it is.
Yes, I do. I know I'm always thinking, how do we get women to have more babies? You know?
Yes, but the problem is not only to make babies.
Oh, of course not. Of course, that's a mental thing.
We need to change the civilization itself. You know, in Russia, there is a movement to protect children and to live in big families. It is called rodovye imenia. So it's kind of town life in villages. Very interesting part of modern Russian life. So maybe sometimes we'll speak about this.
Sure. Well, today when people hear the word Aryan, they think all kinds of things. So what is Aryan? What does it mean to be an Aryan?
Well, historically and linguistically, Aryan means noble, aristocratic. You know, unfortunately, Aryan culture was discredited by Nazi German regime. So if you say Aryan nowadays, they think that you are Hitlerist.
Sure.
But yes, but indeed, to be Aryan means to be a noble, aristocratic, brave, clever person with good genetics. And I have told you that Indo-European peoples were not only Aryan. There were Slavs, Nordic Slavs, Finnish and Turkish people, and so on. So I should say that today we have an Aryan myth. We can use this world in positive matter, but not to be extremist in this question.
Well, as we conclude, please share your website details so people know where to find the material you have available.
Yes, you just find Ateney, it's ateney.ru. That's the link to my website. There is an English webpage in this portal. So there are not very much publications, but there are some very important ones.
Well, I really appreciate your time today. I know it's challenging in another language, but it's great to speak to a fellow Slav. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Lana. You're a very kind person and clever woman. I'm very pleased.
I also recommend all our listeners to visit Tuilev's website and click into the art gallery, where you'll find lovely paganesque Slavic art available as print reproductions. It's in Russian, so click around a bit to see everything. And since Tuilev is a Russian art and classical music enthusiast, be sure to see his YouTube compilation about old Russia's aboriginal paintings. We'll provide the link with this interview. It's interesting how yet again America is in an ideological conflict with Russia, except this time it's not about the fear of communism, but of traditionalism. Not too long ago, the world watched as America joined forces with the Soviets to slaughter innocent German National Socialists. For America, the fear of National Socialism was bigger than communism. So what will it be this time? Will America join with Germany to slaughter innocent Russian nationalists, dropping white phosphorus bombs on St. Petersburg, burning women and children alive because they didn't accept gay porn? And isn't it interesting how the left only wants socialism if it's a world-based socialism, not a nationalist one? Name one country on the planet that has a right-wing dictator or a truly fascist government. You can't. You can't because this is the ultimate threat to the global powers. Why? Because there are economic principles within fascism that work to build a strong, successful, independent nation, especially if the nation is unified by the same folk consciousness. The left works to stop this at all costs. Do people ever question why? I too used to think fascism meant total oppression and leads to mass murder because that's all I heard from the left all the way to the right. People scream fascism, fascism, but don't actually understand what it means economically or socially. I hope to do a program on this very soon. For all of you that didn't get enough from this interview, find Tuilev's compilation of writing called The White World in My Heart for a deeper understanding. Sometimes with a language barrier, it's difficult for people to get out all their thoughts. Lastly, if you want to help support us, please sign up for a Red Ice membership to access all our material. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.